Hello, and thank you very much for taking the time to listen to the Hiking Bug podcast. I'm Paul Gottbold, and I'll be your host today. And if you're currently listening to this whilst out on a hike, that's wonderful. You've obviously already caught the bug. The idea of the Hiking Bug podcast is to provide you with a bit of company on a hike and to hopefully give you some information that will help you with your future hikes and adventures in the great outdoors. In this, our very first podcast, I'll be talking about some of the latest hiking news from around the world, the latest news on the hikingbug.com website, some of the products we've tested, and some newly published scientific hiking-related research. As our podcasting progresses, we'll hopefully be including interviews with both known and unsung hiking heroes, and perhaps maybe even a competition or two a bit further down the line. Let's start things off with hiking in the news. Probably the most significant news story relating to hiking and something that brought a huge smile to our faces comes from South Africa. In the country's Financial Mail was the headline, "Hiking Bug Bites South Africans." Let me read a short snippet from the article. It's like Canal Walk Shopping Centre on Christmas Eve. That's how Catherine Cartwright described the foot traffic on Lion's Head as Capetonians take to the hiking trails around the city. Elsewhere, it's similarly crowded, Catherine added. Going up Constantina Neck or Table Mountain is extraordinary. The mountains are crammed. I think it's incredible. We want people to be healthy, to be outdoors and fit, and create space for physical meditation. It's extraordinary that people are hiking in the numbers they are. Here at the Hiking Bug, we think it's great that people are catching or have caught the hiking bug all over the world. And as we frequently say, it really is the one bug you want to catch. Another thing hitting the headlines over the past week relates to the bond humans have with the outdoors. Around the world, respected news organisations have been getting to grips with something that us hikers have known for the whole of our lives, and that's the hugely beneficial role the outdoor plays in improving one's mental health. Biophilia is a word I frequently come across in my role as a journalist, and is something being adopted and implemented by designers working in multiple sectors, their aim being to try to bring nature into more urban environments. For those who are not familiar with the word, it basically means love of life, and was first brought to mainstream attention in Edward Wilson's 1984 book called Biophilia. In the book, Wilson theorised that humans have an innate, perhaps genetic connection with the natural world, and he's been proven right. Unfortunately, Wilson passed away before this could be confirmed. Around the world, we've been seeing headlines such as, "Why do we love the great outdoors? Part of the answer is in our genes." And, "Outdoor types have nature-loving genes." These stories, and many more, relate to a new study published in the peer-reviewed journal PLOS Biology, which confirmed the long-standing biophilia hypothesis that humans do have an innate tendency to seek out connections with the natural environment. University of Queensland professor Richard Fuller was part of a research team that conducted the study in collaboration with researchers from the National University of Singapore. What the study revealed was in line with countless other studies, that genetics and environmental factors are the main influences in a person's connection to nature. The study surveyed 1,153 pairs of twins from the Twins UK registry about how they experience nature and asked them to rate their familiarity with and desire to be in nature. The researchers found that identical twins who share almost 100% of their genes held more similar views about nature and how frequently they visited nature. It turns out identical twins are much more similar to each other in the strength of their connection to nature than non-identical twins. In simple terms, the love of the outdoors is genetically programmed into us. It's quite obvious that spending time outdoors is good for mental health, and this new study provides evidence that genes influence how people feel towards nature and their tendency to visit natural spaces. Professor Fuller said, "There is a genetic basis that supports the idea that we have an innate connection to nature, and a lot of it is under our own control, and we should increase and harness those benefits." In 2018, Professor Fuller was also part of a study that showed a reduction in nature's experience in urban environments is a key factor for mental health issues and is associated with an increased risk of anxiety and depression. The professor said, more than half of the world's population lives in urban areas, and obviously cities are places where nature has largely been replaced by built infrastructure. That's had some pretty big impacts, in particular on mental health. Spending time in nature is a good way of counteracting some of the ills of city living. So, it's official. Science has confirmed that the joy and pleasure we experience from being outdoors on our hikes is down to our genetics. That's not to say that everyone is blessed with our genetics. For those who aren't, all is not lost. Just find a friend with the hiking bug and make sure you catch it from them. While we're on the topic of how the natural world can improve one's mental health, I thought it would be good to remind or introduce our listeners to Kaplan's attention restoration theory. Spending time in nature by watching a sunset, gazing at the ocean or mountains, or escaping to the countryside or a natural retreat provides us with the opportunity to rest, reflect, and restore our very selves. You've very likely noticed this phenomenon before. Have you ever been having a rough day or feeling down, but found yourself pleasantly distracted by a beautiful scene? I'm guessing you have. This experience demonstrates nature's valuable roles in our lives and hints at other potential roles, contributing to overcoming mental fatigue and improving our ability to focus and direct our attention effectively. The theory was developed by Rachel and Stephen Kaplan in the 1980s in their book The Experience of Nature, A Psychological Perspective. In their book, the Kaplans describe a series of characteristics that an environment must have to be restorative and how interaction with a restorative environment can change a negative state into a positive one. The characteristics are fascination, the ability of an environment to generate awe in people. Being away, a feeling that can be objective or subjective in form. Extension, the connection between each element found in that environment. And compatibility, characteristics found in an environment that meet the preferences and goals of a person. Most people will find that they can only focus their attention for a certain period of time before feeling mentally fatigued. It has been found that natural environments tend to provide greater recovery from this fatigue and at the same time restore cognitive resources depleted by everyday routine activities in built-up non-green environments. As I mentioned at the start of this podcast, if you're listening to this while out on a hike, you're already experiencing this, and the positive news for me is you're likely taking in what I'm saying. If you're listening to this at work, you might want to rewind this bit, listen to it again. Before we go on to the next article, which relates to how you might be able to save some money with regards to your hiking equipment, I'm going to talk to you about some products we recently purchased that are also designed to save you more than a bob or two. We're all living in a time when costs seem to be going in only one direction, and sadly, that's upwards. So it would be remiss of us not to look at the ways to reduce the amount of money we spend on our hobbies and activities, and in this case, it's hiking. My wife and I prefer to buy nearly new and used clothing for our hiking adventures. One of the main reasons we do this is to prevent it from contributing to the ongoing landfill problem. The clothing, shoes and boots we've purchased frequently look like they've seen better days. And often the clothing's special properties, such as their water resistance, is diminished. Yes, if you didn't know, the waterproofing qualities on clothing does actually degrade over time. It's quite easy to spot. When you're wearing a supposedly waterproof piece of clothing in the rain, look to see if there is an area darker. This indicates that the water has soaked into the material and the waterproofing properties need a boost. I wouldn't worry if you're out and about now and it's raining, as most inner linings will also help to prevent water penetration. However, if you can feel it coming through all the layers, you know it's time to invest in some waterproofing solution. Waterproof fabric is made up of tiny one-way valves, and over time these can become clogged up. Reproofing clothing is a lot simpler than you imagine, and companies such as Grainger's make it very simple. Most clothing manufacturers suggest reproofing items that are used regularly every 6 months, and I'm quite sure some of you listening to this podcast didn't even know that. Our hiking clothing has been put through the mill over the past 5 months. Our favourite items have joined us on more than 750,000 hiking steps and up nigh on 50,000 feet of climbs. After all this, they're well deserving of a break and a treat. When it comes to waterproofing, some of the most recognisable names in the industry are Nick Wax, Grainger's and Fabsil. My wife and I are fans of history, so we decided upon Grainger's products. If you're wondering why we opted for Grainger's, it is purely based on their amazing story. If you weren't aware, Grainger's is a British brand and is credited with making the world's first waterproofing solution for the outdoors market. Not only this, their products helped Tenzing Norgay and Edmund Hillary to reach the peak of Everest. Grainger's are without a doubt the pioneers in the field. Grainger's motto is think different, live different and explore more, which fits in perfectly with our lifestyle, and it also helps that the company is wholly committed to caring for the environment. A few weeks ago, we popped onto the Amazon website and ordered a 1-litre bottle of Grainger's Wash and Repel 2-in-1 solution, and whilst on the site, we also purchased their footwear care kit. The Grainger's 2-in-1 solution is designed to clean and reproof outdoor gear in just one wash cycle. If you're starting to get a little worried that waterproofing fabrics could be overly technical, please don't. It's a very simple process, and all you need to do is to pop your clothes into a clean washing machine, use 2 cups of the solution for the first jacket and 1 more cap for each additional item. You then wash the clothing on a full cycle and dry it. Grainger's suggests you use heat from a tumble dryer or ironing the clothing afterwards to fully activate the waterproofing. I should also mention that the solution is said to be suitable for all types of fabric. For our testing, we used 3 pairs of Norona Svalbard Flex 1 softshell pants. We use Norona trousers more than any other brand on our hikes. Until someone convinces us otherwise, we think they're the best hiking trousers you can buy. We don't have a tumble dry option with our washing machine, and we're hesitant about ironing something that was damp. Fortunately, we do have one of those covered drying machines that you can hang clothing inside and use that instead. After 40 minutes of drying, they were bone dry. We inspected them carefully and visually. They looked great, pretty much brand new. We then took a pair and put 1 leg under the tap and turned the water on. It was a huge relief to see the water rolling off and beading, not soaking into the fabric. It was mission accomplished. We'd successfully breathed new life into our go-to hiking trousers, and with a good following wind, they'll be perfect for at least the next 6 months. Now that it was clear that Grainger's really do know their stuff, we were eager to try their footwear kit. Inside the kit was 3 bottles, the footwear and gear cleaner, which removes all of the dirt and grime, footwear repel plus, which, as its name suggests, is the footwear waterproofer and a conditioner. Added to this is a stiff brush to remove dried on dirt, and finally a smaller bottle that contained their odour eliminator. I chose 2 completely different styles of boot for the test, a pair of lower in suede leather and a pair of a solo Puma boots, which were predominantly made with a high-tech fabric. The lowers were the first to be tested, as they are more robust, having been used a lot more than the Asolos, which I consider to be more of a fair-weather boot. I started by brushing any dried-on mud from the sides of the boots, and also gave the material areas a slightly less vigorous brushing. The gear cleaner comes in 275ml spray bottles, and is suitable for all materials. I guess that the cleaning solution would need to be worked in, and I felt that the stiff brush in the kit would be a little bit too much. Fortunately, Natasha came up with the ideal solution. She suggested that I used a toothbrush we'd picked up in a posh hotel on one of our many travels. I sprayed the liquid onto the boots and worked the solution in using the toothbrush. I must admit, I did find it to be quite therapeutic and relaxing. As I worked my way through the nooks and the crannies of the boot, I could see it changing colour. As the boot was cleaned, it changed from what was a dusty coloured beige into more of a milk chocolate brown. I'd completely forgotten that that was the original colour. Once I had finished, I popped them onto a wire rack over the radiator to dry off. We didn't take a proper look at them until the following day, and the improvement was obvious. They were now uniform brown in colour and looked great. Now that they were clean, I decided to try the waterproofing. Granger suggests spraying their solution onto a damp material, so I found a water mist spraying bottle and set about treating my boots to a thin layer of water. Once I was sure that they were uniformly damp, I began to spray the waterproofing solution on them. This part of the process is messier than the cleaning process, as the waterproofing solution runs straight off the rubber. Based on Granger's suggestion, I did have with me a cloth to wipe away any of the excess liquid. Once again, I placed the boots over the radiator to dry. The following day, I inspected them and they looked great. However, this time, I was armed with the knowledge that they'd now be far more water resistant than they were. To completely convince myself, I sprayed some water onto the suede and was pleased to find that the water didn't soak in and I could shake it off over the sink. I repeated the same process with the Asolo boots and had the same excellent result. I didn't do the waterproof test on these boots as they are made with a more of a mesh-like material. However, I'm quite sure that like the lower boots, they'd now be a lot more waterproof than they certainly were. So there you have it. Grangers are 2 for 2 in our tests and I've been left with what, in most people's eyes, are pairs of brand new boots. Next, we'll be looking at another way that could save you some money if you're not a fan of standing out and would prefer to blend into the background. One thing that we've experimented with over the past year and have in some cases adopted in using is surplus military gear on our hikes. In the middle part of last year, I purchased 2 pairs of plain green Special Forces trousers for hiking. The trousers came with more pockets than I could ever need, were quick drying, and my thinking was, if they're good enough for the World Special Forces, then they'll certainly be good enough for me. The good news is that they've been great, and I was able to win 2 brand new pairs for £15, or around $20 in American money. So why should you use military surplus gear for hiking? Brand new, branded hiking gear can be very expensive, and in some cases, it has been proven to be unreliable. There's little worse than heading miles out into a hike only to discover that your gear hasn't prepared you to handle the elements. This is where military surplus can come in handy, as most military surplus gear is designed to withstand the harshest of conditions, and you can find things made for specific environments such as the desert, mountain, or even forests. One of the biggest lures of buying military surplus is the comparatively low price. However, before deciding whether or not to purchase any military surplus for your hike, you need to weigh up the pros and cons. As mentioned, the big benefit of military surplus is it is durable and affordable. Also, it's very functional. If you're the type of hiker that likes to bring a first aid kit, rope, or small utility knife with you, there's a good chance that the military surplus gear will come with specific compartments for essentials like this. There are some drawbacks with using military surplus, mainly that they are no-frill products. In simple terms, military surplus products are made with 2 main considerations, reliability and ease of use. An example of this comes with military packs, particularly those used in the army. They are often made of thick canvas, and while this is a durable material, it's also quite heavy when compared to materials like nylon or Gore-Tex. Another thing to consider before buying military surplus products is the comparatively bland looks. Let's not forget that most military gear is specifically designed to prevent you from standing out. Although many people like the look of military gear, it's certainly not the most exciting to look at. Don't expect to find any vibrant colours or eye-catching patterns on it. I come from a military family and have spent time in the UK Armed Forces myself, so I have always been surrounded by military equipment. However, that was back in the 1980s and technology has moved on massively since those days. Nowadays, it's not uncommon to see crossovers between outdoor wear manufacturers and the military. An excellent example of this is Lowa boots, spelt L-O-W-A. I'm a massive fan of Lowa and wear a pair of their boots on many of my hikes. Lowa's boots are used by military forces around the world. However, I'm quite positive that what the military wears is different from the general hiking boots made by the company. So you need to do some proper research, particularly before you make an online purchase. Just because it has the same brand name doesn't automatically mean you should buy it. In a nutshell, surplus military gear can be a great way to save yourself some money, but its primary feature is its no-frills practicality. If you're a fan of colour, and unless you're a dab hand with dyes, you should stick to the dedicated outdoor brands. Before we go on to the next news piece, I wanted to talk about listening to music, and in particular music when you're on a hike. Currently, we're compiling a list of great and inspirational songs to listen to whilst on a hike for the website. We're not taking the easy way out and only including songs that contain words such as walk or walking. We're focusing on songs that inspire, songs that will make you happy and prompt you to look at what's around you. It's well documented that music, like hiking, can be a huge benefit to one's mental health. One song that I enjoy listening to almost above every other, which sadly hasn't made the list yet, is Procol Harum's Whiter Shade of Pale. You probably know it. It's the one that starts, "We skip the light fandango, turn cartwheels across the floor." But I must admit that I'm not talking about the original from the 1960s, rather the live daytime performance at an outdoor Danish concert in 2006. Singing the song was Gary Brooker, the founder of the band, and although he was somewhat greyer, his voice to me sounded better than ever. What made this performance even more special was the orchestra accompanying Gary and the huge choir, all of which made it sound heavenly. The special thing for me about this performance is it was real. No auto-tune, overproduction, just a stage with a 61-year-old man with an extraordinary voice. And I'll admit, I often shed a tear or two when I watch it. The main reason the song's not made the list is it's not available as a downloadable track as far as I'm aware, only watchable on video. If I'm wrong about this, then it will definitely be in the top three. When you get a moment, pop onto YouTube and type Whiter Shade of Pale Denmark 2006 and decide for yourself if it would make your ultimate hiking music playlist. Eatthis.com recently ran an article titled 5 Secret Side Effects of Hiking More Right Now. Hiking, as you've no doubt gathered, is a particularly hot topic at the moment, and this is in no small part to something nasty still being in the air. Hiking is a topic that can be written about in anything from traditional press to dedicated sports and activity magazines, luxury and lifestyle publications, and even food platforms such as the US-based Eat This, Not That. Hiking is unique in that those who are embarking on a hike are stripped bare of what usually defines them in their everyday lives. No suits, no designer clothes, flashy cars, large houses, etc. On a hike, everyone is equal, irrespective of their social standing, wealth, and even looks, and that for me is one of its best qualities. I'm not going to go through the whole of this article. Instead, I'm going to read a couple of the salient points that some people might have forgotten or didn't know, just to remind you why you should be out there hiking. Eatthis.com said, "The best part about this outdoor activity is that it can be enjoyed at any age and any stage of life, regardless of skill. Not to mention, there are over 400 national parks to choose from in every part of the United States, each offering its own unique challenges and beauty that can suit whatever getaway you may be looking for. In addition to enjoying an amazing getaway, you will also derive more proven health benefits from taking a hike than you'll ever know. This fun activity will not simply give you the calves, thighs, abs and glutes, a solid workout will, but it'll also give you far more. The first benefit I'm going to read to you is you'll exert your body's core muscles and fine-tune your balance. Hiking is a terrific source of cardio. The more hills you can include on your route, the better workout you will have. Anytime you step up your cardio fitness routine, you will help your heart work more vigorously. Taking on a natural flow of inclines and declines will exert your body's core muscles while fine-tuning balance, since the varied lateral movements you will hit up on an irregular trail surface is very different from that of a treadmill, as Dr. Aaron Bagish of the Cardiovascular Performance Program at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital explained to Harvard Health Publishing. Another benefit that many hikers might not know is a brisk and safe hike can help those suffering with arthritis. If you're prone to or suffering from arthritis, a safe brisk hike can actually help quite a bit and assist in alleviating any pain you may have. When you're hiking, you're keeping the joints active while maintaining the strength of the muscles around them. Hiking is also said to build your bone density, slow down the loss of calcium, and make your bones stronger. And finally, and possibly the most important of all the benefits hiking offers, you'll increase your chances of living longer. The next time someone tells you to go take a hike, honestly, embrace it and take their advice. By doing so, you can actually increase your chances of living longer. Studies reveal that when you regularly perform physical activities, you dramatically reduce your chances of developing a chronic illness, including diabetes and colon cancer. Living a healthy, active lifestyle can even lower your chances of passing away from coronary heart disease as well. One benefit that wasn't listed in the eatthis.com article is the opportunity for people to learn about the natural environment. Watching television shows and reading about the countryside through words is all well and good. However, nothing beats actually experiencing it in person. We live in a time where governments and organisations are constantly reminding us about the harm people and businesses are doing to the planet and how we're collectively wiping out other species and causing changes in the weather. The best way for change to happen is by learning exactly what it is we're being asked to protect, and this is where hiking stands front and centre. If people start to enjoy what they are being asked to protect, they're far more likely to make the effort to protect it. It's hardly rocket science. The final thing I'll be talking about is my latest outdoor adventure. For our latest hike, Natasha and I headed to one of the most beautiful parts of the Peak District in England. Our usual port of call from our base in Lancashire is the Yorkshire Dales or the Lake District, but given the varied weather around the country, our choice was on this occasion somewhat limited. As usual, Natasha picked the hike, and my only condition was that it needed some rocks to climb, as I needed more footage for one of our YouTube videos. She picked a circular 13.5 kilometre hike that encompassed Hen Cloud, the Roaches, and Ludge Church. We parked the car, and after a short walk, the first rocky peak came into view. We were lucky as there were very few people around, which gave us the opportunity to film my first piece to camera. Once this was done, we carried on to the base of the hill. We could see that a path was winding around the base of it, but also noticed an indistinct path heading up to the exposed rock. I said to Natasha, "That's where we need to go. We can get all the footage we need from up there, and then just head off and enjoy the rest of the walk." Getting to where we needed to be was a bit of a scramble, and I immediately started scouting for unique locations in what were quite hard to reach places from where to film. I must admit that Natasha wasn't as enthusiastic as I was. Natasha is a super fit woman, and she's got a very sensible head on her. The thought of her husband trying to climb sheer rock faces was for her a big no-no. So we compromised, and I picked locations that did still require some climbing, but in areas where she could help me out if I got into any difficulties. I was like a kid in a candy shop on the rocks, scampering around, stretching my legs like Jean-Claude Van Damme did in his famous advert when he did the splits between two moving trucks. In fact, I put my body into positions that I had never likely experienced before. The next morning, I could feel my muscles aching. I didn't even know I had some of those. I suppose at this stage I should remind everyone who's going on a hike to make sure you do some stretching before you head off. Otherwise you'll be making strange noises, just like I was. After about an hour, we had all the footage we needed, and from where we were, we continued to scramble up to the top. One of the things Natasha and I love about hiking is we often get to see some amazing rock formations, and in this respect, Hen Cloud didn't disappoint. After 30 minutes of enjoying the views and taking photos, we took a leisurely hike over to the Roaches, passing lots of amazing rocks along the way whilst enjoying the far-reaching views. Last on our list was Ludge Church, which we were very excited about. A short while back, we took a look at a place called Hull Pot, which is the largest natural hole in England. From our research on the internet, Ludge Church looked to be equally impressive, but in a far different way. We were following a route on the All Trails app, which took us through something called Forest Wood. Bit of a lazy name, if you ask me. Unfortunately, although the sun was shining, it had obviously been raining heavily on previous days, as the route through the forest was incredibly muddy. On one or more occasion, we did think of throwing the towel in and heading back to somewhere a little bit more picturesque. However, we decided that as we'd come this far, we might as well see it through to the end, and it was a good thing we did. Lud's Church is quite amazing, and it was unlike anything we'd seen before on our hikes. Imagine that a 500-foot-tall giant had taken a meat cleaver and started to whack it into the ground, and you'll understand a little bit more what we saw. Lud's Church is basically an 18-metre-deep chasm with moss and foliage covering its sheer sides. When we were there, the floor was wet and muddy, and the narrow walls restricted the light, which created a somewhat magical atmosphere, but at the same time, parts of it seemed quite foreboding. We explored Lud's Church for about 10 minutes before deciding to head back to the car. We had two options. We could retrace our steps back through the mud, or take the easy way out, which was to head along the road and follow it straight back to the car. At this point, my earlier exertions were starting to take their toll, and I convinced Natasha to take the simpler, less intensive route back. And it was a good thing that we did, because we passed by a small field with some Highland cattle, Natasha's favourite bovine. It was a welcome relief for me too, as it gave me a chance to rest my legs while my wife excitedly took some photos. Overall, aside from a couple of minor gripes that I won't go into, it was an amazing walk and something we would wholeheartedly recommend. So that's it. It's a wrap for this podcast. Thank you again for taking the time to listen. We're working away on our next podcast, which should be added soon. In the meantime, you can keep up to date with our news on the website thehikingbug.com and our YouTube channel. You'll find the link to it on the top of the homepage of the website. From everyone involved with The Hiking Bug, keep safe, be responsible, considerate, and happy hiking.